On Saturday, to protest something, I'm going to burn copies of Sarah Palin's book. Jesus, what a day! Oh my God, I have never seen one strange man. Oh, Pastor Terry Jones, get so much attention so quickly. Ever. I've never seen anyone do this. Lee Harvey Oswald didn't get this much attention. It's astonishing. But that's where we live now, so, you know, whatever. I don't know how much I want to say about this. I really don't. I do have a message for you from the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, though. Here it is. We all know too well what happens when Republicans run the show. Apologies and favors for big oil and Wall Street, schemes to privatize or do away with Social Security, and hundreds of thousands more layoffs for our teachers, nurses, firefighters, police officers, you name it. As we get close to November, remember, history repeats itself only if you let it. Remember the 5th of November. Regardless of what you've heard today, the Quran burning is still on. The world is about to go up in flames in a paroxysm of religious madness. All because of this mustachioed freak down in... I just can't believe this. See, I can't help it. I look at this as massive humor. Oh, sure, it's sick, disgusting humor. But what else is it? What else is it? Here, some little freak in Florida who has a certain belief system, and that belief system includes, you know, like with Franklin Graham and the rest of these people, the direct line to God. He is so intense. He's got 50 families who have signed on to, I don't know, listen to whatever revelations come out of this tongue-speaking freak's mouth. Yeah, he speaks in tongues. Given a chance, he'd handle snakes. Tell you what, Reb, let me go get the snakes. And I'll give you a bag full of snakes. And you get over there in that Dove Outreach Center and get them old snakes all agitated, right? Shake the tambourine and dance around and speak in your tongues. Then stick your hand in there and bring out, "For he shall hold up serpents." Go ahead. This guy with 50 families, members of his church, and he is literally, there is no equivocation here. He's literally insane. He's a madman. He's totally nuts. Which means that he connects perfectly with the insane people halfway around the world who start jumping up and down in the street. Why aren't they concerned, these Muslims? And maybe they are, but why aren't they more concerned about the fact that the United States government burns actual Muslims? Not just their holy book. But this is crazy. It's crazy. Oh, by the way, speaking of crazy, go to MikeMalloy.com. Our artist in residence who runs Zazzle. What?
No, she doesn't run Zazzle. I'm sorry, but Zazzle is like Cafe Press.
Oh, I see.
Giant manufacturing company for online merchandise. Zazzle markets the products that she owns, Truth Seeker merchandise, which is advertised on our site.
And thank you very much.
Produced by Zazzle. And
okay. Anyway, I got an email from the artist, Sandra, and she says, I just added some dark-colored and long-sleeve shirts for the fall season. Thank you, Kathy. I never have any idea what's going on there. I don't know Zazzle from Adam's house cat or from Moses's house cat or, you know, oh, my God.
But you can do the Google.
I can do the Google. Please do that. We're probably, we probably could very definitely, yes, use whatever support you might want to provide. Again, we don't ask for contributions, but we do ask you to buy the yearly podcast subscriptions, which I understand is falling precipitously. You better wake up, folks, or one night at 9 o'clock, you're going to, Eastern time, you're going to tune on your electric radio and you're going to hear another right winger. Anyway, podcast subscriptions, and you know how to get one, or the merchandise at MikeMalloy.com. Check out some of the design. It's really, really interesting and well done stuff. Sandra is the kind of artist that, when she puts her designs on clothing, it's fun to wear. That's a hell of a sentence, but you know what I mean, right? Okay. Hey, you know, one thing I'm curious about, not curious, but because it's very expected, but the silence of the lambs, the Republican leadership where it concerns the psychopath down in down in Florida. I'm talking about especially the Jewish members of Congress. I can't believe this. I can't believe this. Where is, well, what's that little freak's name? Eric, what's his name? Eric, I have it here. Hold on. Eric, oh, God. Eric, you know who I mean, Kathy, the number two guy in the Republican Party in the House. Eric, I'll just sit here until I get it. Eric, do 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 Cantor, who's probably at synagogue tonight. But I don't quite get this. I really don't. The Republicans, a couple of them have come out and given this kind of tepid, not even condemnation, just, we don't think that's right. You know, Haley Barbour and Mitt Romney and Lindsey Graham. And then you have House Minority Leader John Boehner, who said that what this crazy freak in Florida was doing was not wise. But he conflated it with the Park 51 Islamic Center that the wingnuts are going crazy over, just like the psychopath down in Florida. These people are nuts. But you know who's been quiet on this issue? Nobody said a word. George Bush, Newt Gingrich, Michael Steele. Michael, you should know better. They used to lynch people who looked like you, hang you, track you down, and kill you. And you're not going to say anything? Eric Cantor, they gassed 6 million, and you're not going to say anything? Mitch McConnell, forget him. Jeff Sessions, Susan Collins, Liz Cheney. Hey, Liz, what's the matter? Can't you speak up? Cat got your tongue? Not a word. Not a word. Even when General of the Army's David Petraeus, who has spent quite a bit of his career burning actual Muslims rather than burning their books, even he comes out and says something, and these right-wingers in Congress say nothing. I would remind them, especially those who should know better. They came for the communists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. Then they came for me. And by that time, no one was left to speak up. Pastor Martin Niemöller. And when you have people who come for the Muslims first, this time, it's not the communists or the liberals or the Jews or the trade unionists. It's the Muslims. And Eric Cantor and George Bush and the rest of these people are not going to say anything?
For a liberal helping of truth, it's More Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. The reason the right wing politicians in this country are silent is because this is what they've been pushing for. And not just the politicians, but the Glenn Becks and the Sean Hannitys and Sarah Palins, and what's her name, the tall, skinny blonde, Ann Coulter. This is what they've been pushing for. They want bloodshed in the streets. I've been saying this for months. This is just one example. So your big-time right-wing Pauls and big-time right-wing media figures, they are being very quiet about this. And any noise they're making is like weak tea, you know. It's just like, oh, well, you know, I believe in freedom of speech, but maybe this is going a bit too far. The Republicans want to see blood. They want to see buckets, oceans of blood. They want to see the country knee-deep in blood. It doesn't matter to these right-wingers whether it is black against white, a Jew against Gentile, Muslim against Christian, gay against white. They don't care. They just want the blood, because that will mean that they have finally succeeded in reducing the country into an immobilized state that will result in calling out the military. Time to bring on martial law. All right, that's enough of that crap. You had your 213 or 43 or whatever it is years. It's all over now, boobala. All the right-wing politicians with their campaign ads, the ones who have been running the campaign ads about 9/11, never again, and the burning towers, and all this stuff about the mosque at Ground Zero, and which it is not either one. It is not a mosque, and it's not at Ground Zero. It's all right-wing politics. The proof? Muslims pray inside the Pentagon. There's your proof! And nobody says a word. So, these son of a bitches who are destroying the United States of America, the right wingers, whether they are politicians or media commentators or gutless, cowardly Democrats, I don't care who they are. All of this, you see, prompts a freak like Terry Jones, who is clinically nuts, to pull the stunt. Now, what do you think is going to happen? In the first place, he's going to go ahead with it. You know that. I have a statement here. Gordon sent me from Oklahoma. This is a statement from the Westboro Baptist Church, the ones who carry the God Hates Fag signs and goes to funerals and says America's going to burn in hell because we don't burn all the fags, right? Well, what's that freak's name at the Westboro Baptist Church? Phelps, Fred Phelps. If you go to their website, and you shouldn't, because if you look upon their website, you will turn into a frog. But if you go there, It says, the WBC, that's the Westboro Baptist Church, the WBC burned the Quran once, and a few sissy brats have doomed America, bully Terry Jones, and the Dub World Outreach Center until they changed their plans to burn that blasphemous tripe called the Quran. Then Westboro Baptist Church will burn it again to clearly show you some things. So you see what's going to happen, right? Every little turd-head, right-wing Christian nutbag with a following of 9 or 26 or whatever is going to demand his phone call from Secretary of Defense Robert Gates. Going to demand his plea from General David Petraeus. This is how it works. So, given our sick, twisted, perverted, disgusting, filthy, filthy media, this thing has gotten the kind of attention that you would expect would come when somebody declares war on somebody and starts World War III. Oh, wait a minute. That might be what this is.
You know what Reverend Jones needs other than an audition?
To get laid.
On the new Dukes of Hazzard show. No, he needs one of those big Mylar balloons. You know, like Balloon Boy had. Because when this stunt's over, how is he going to get his reality TV show?
He
needs to set somebody up
saucer.
Here,
yeah, okay.
Send him up in a balloon and say, you know, they're coming, that they've got Oral Roberts' ghost up there going to meet Jesus in the prayer tower.
Yeah, that's what they need. What madness. And, you know, it's interesting. The United States of America has spent the past 10 years burning as many Muslims as it possibly could all over the Middle East. And we support Israel that also believes in burning Muslims as many as possible in Palestine. And, of course, the ratio of Americans burning Muslims to Israelis burning Muslims is about 1,000,000 to 1. But we devote millions of dollars in training and troops to actually burn real live Muslims. But what happens is the old Uncle Joe Stalin rule applies here. One death, he said, is a tragedy, but 1,000,000 deaths are a statistic. Do you get that?
Excuse me, ma'am, the species has amused itself to death.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
You notice how the Christian fundamentalists are very quiet about this too, huh? Where's Pat Robertson? Where's, never mind. Oh, my God. The whole secret of existence is to have no fear. And this, of course, is what eats up all of these religious doctrines. They're founded on fear. They tell you they're founded on love. No, they're not. No, they're not. They're founded on fear. And as Gautama Buddha said, the whole secret of existence is to have no fear. Never fear what will become of you. Depend on no one. Only the moment you reject all help are you freed. Gautama Buddha said that. Now, so what? What does that got to do with anything, Malloy? Because seriously, truthfully, I believe this. Maybe you don't. If you don't, that's only because you're ignorant and stupid. But religion is based on fear. It's just totally based on fear. the or some people, a little bit more charitable than I, would say it's based on uncertainty. I say it's fear. I say it's fear. Oh, well. What else do we have here? This is something very important. Oh, yeah, the Koch brothers that we talked about last, well, we've talked about many times, but because Jane Mayer has a huge article in, where is it, in New Yorker? I think it's New Yorker. They are in the news, of course. Some of us on the left are talking about these filthy bastards, the Koch brothers, billionaire oil company owners who are out. They have one goal before they die, and they will probably die fairly quickly. Although maybe not. You know, when you have billions and billions of dollars of discretionary income, if your heart, liver, lungs, brain, anything starts to fail, you just go buy a new one. And if there's none available, you kill somebody and take theirs. Very simple. Susie Madrak again. Writing at Crooks and Liars, she points out that the Koch brothers have donated $1 million to the campaign to suspend California's climate law. Yeah. Susie writes, I suppose this should be filed somewhere under Dog Bites Man. I keep wondering, do the Koch brothers live in a different universe, one without massive heat waves, blizzards, and storms, one where all kinds of wildlife is showing up in places where it's not supposed to be? It can't be about money. They already have more money than they'll ever spend. So it must be that they just like bending the national agenda to their will. Thank God this is America, where big money really can buy anything. And here's the story. An oil company headed by billionaires David and Charles Koch has contributed, an oil company, has contributed $1 million to the campaign to suspend California's landmark climate change law. Flint Hills Resources does not have any oil interest in California, but is a big opponent of climate change legislation around the country. On Thursday, the Kansas-based refining and chemicals manufacturer, the Koch brothers, threw its weight behind Prop 23, the ballot initiative. Here we go again, mob rule, that seeks to suspend California's greenhouse gas reduction law until the economy improves. Until the economy improves? Oh, I see. Craig Holman, a campaign finance expert at Public Citizen, said, quote, this is a significant game changer. They want to stop the state that's well known for leading the way when it comes to climate change legislation, end quote. California Secretary of State's office records show that Flint Hills Resources is now the third largest backer of Prop 23 behind Texas-based oil companies Valero Energy and Tesoro Corporation. They're all oil companies, and they want this greenhouse gas thing stopped immediately. In other words, they want us all dead. On Thursday, Tesoro also donated $1 million to the Yes on 23 committee, bringing the total contributions to about $1.5 million. Overall, the committee has raised more than $8.2 million, with nearly half, or about $4 million, coming from Valero. A spokeswoman for Flint Hills, someone named K.V. Stavanoha, said the company Flint Hills Resources believes that California's law sets a bad precedent for the rest of the nation. She said, quote, Flint Hills believes that implementing the law will cause significant job losses and higher energy costs, end quote. You see how they do it? You see how they do it? And the bobbleheads in California will hear that and go, everybody I know is unemployed. I still have a job at McDonald's. I don't want to lose my job. I guess I better vote yes on Prop 23 and undo the damage those dirty goddamn environmentalists have done. See how that works? In a different time, a different place, in a fantasy world, the Koch brothers or their ilk would be taken out behind the nearest building and shot. Because in that different time and different fantasy place that I'm talking about, these two would be considered threats to the very existence of humanity. And why should these imaginary people be tolerated in this imaginary world I'm imaginarily talking about? Huh? Jesus, God. But what does media focus on today? Some little two-bit prick down in Florida named Jones, Reverend Jones. Oh, my God, not another one. Who decides he's going to burn somebody's holy book. Hell, American soldiers have already burned Qurans in Afghanistan. Whoop! But did the media focus on that? No. I'm sorry, they didn't burn Qurans, they burned Bibles. That's right, Christian Bibles. Is there any attention paid to this stuff? No, except, well, come on, Mike, it's 3 days after Labor Day, slow news day, nothing happening, the economy's in the tank, we're getting our asses kicked in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, all over the planet, jobs are disappearing hand over fist, we got to have something to talk about. Oh, I know! Let's focus all of our media attention in this great republic on some little twit down in Florida who says he's going to burn Qurans. Oh, wonderful. Make sure the story is run 24/7 through every single news cycle. But isn't that what you're doing, Beloy? Yeah. But I'm not a news program. I'm not legitimate media. I'm as illegitimate as they come. This is Renegade Radio. This is something you listen to when you go, damn, I wonder what the other side's talking about. Let's switch into that crazy bastard Malloy from the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. You know, them crazy old white men. You got to be careful. Woo! Coming up next hour and the hour after that, I have some stuff that I really, really, really got into this morning. I walked up to the top of the driveway again this morning, picked up the newspaper, the New York Times, and opened it up, and there it was. All about... Well, I don't want to give it away. I'm not going to give it away. You got to... You got to stick around. You got to stick around and hear these two stories that I've got. It's only two, so they're in depth. Malloy goes in depth tonight, okay? In depth. Not the usual skimming across the surface of things as we do on this program. Never, you know, I hesitate to Tom Hartman a subject, though. I really do. I know Tom gets real, real deep, but that's because Tom is a very smart man, very intellectual, very well educated, well read, and well written. And, you know, I'm just a reactionary, radical, I don't know. Every time I think about it, I want to get on my knees and thank my Lord and Savior, Glenn Beck. Ooh, ah, and his mama, Sarah. Oh. No, seriously, stick around because, not that we're going anywhere now, I'm just saying, stick around later. Oh, and the state secrets, the George Bush thing. Barack Obama is really putting that to good use. It wins again. We're going to talk about that when we come back right after this break. And it's from Nick Bauman over at Mother Jones. So you might want to stick around for this or not. I don't know. If you go to one of the television networks, I'm sure they're talking about the little prick down in Florida. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Michael Loy. Sing along.
More Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. All national institutions of churches, whether Jewish, Christian, or Turkish, appear to me no other than human invention set up to terrify and enslave mankind and monopolize power and profit. Thomas Paine said that. Thank you, Bob. You know, radical, revolutionary Thomas Paine. What did he know? This prospect of any legal accountability for the government's rendition, detention, interrogation, torture programs, all of it dimmed dramatically this week, according to Nick Bauman, writing at Mother Jones. Yesterday, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which, by the way, is considered to be one of the most liberal courts of appeals in the United States, that court ruled that the so-called state secrets privilege, put together by during the Bush administration, the Bush administration, maybe it predates Bush. Anyway, the state secret privilege protects the government and its contractors from a lawsuit fought by five men who say they were kidnapped, flown to foreign countries, tortured on the behalf of the American government. Even the ACLU, which supported the men in their suit, acknowledged that the decision, quote, all but shuts the door on accountability for the illegal program, end quote. The 6-5 ruling in the case, Mohammed et al. Versus Jeppesen Data Plan, rests on the state secrets privilege. In the years after September 11th, the controversial doctrine has basically acted as a get-out-of-court-free card for the Bush and Obama administration, plural, in cases related to torture and domestic spying. In this particular lawsuit, the plaintiff said they were tortured and as a result of that, they sued Jeppesen Data Plan, a Boeing subsidiary that managed the rendition flights for the CIA. The government does not dispute the central facts of the case, including the fact that Binyan Mohammed, the main plaintiff, was tortured. But the Obama administration, which continued the Bush administration policy of intervening in the case on Jeppesen's behalf, was still able to get a dismissal by saying the magic words, state secrets! So basically, the government can kidnap you and send you to be tortured. Yet, even if your contractors acknowledge what they were doing, if the government wants to call their own lawbreaking a secret, the most liberal circuit court in the country agrees they can. Son of a bitch. Ben Wisner, who argued the case for the ACLU, sums it up, quote, this is a sad day, not only for the torture victims whose attempt to seek justice has been extinguished, but for all Americans who care about the rule of law and our nation's reputation in the world. To date, not a single victim of the Bush administration's torture program has had his day in court. If today's decision is allowed to stand, the United States will have closed its courtroom doors to torture victims while providing complete immunity to their torturers. The torture architects and their enablers may have escaped the judgment of this court, but they will not escape the judgment of history. Wow. It's just astonishing. The son of a bitches knew during the Bush administration, the people in the Obama administration, including Barack Obama, they knew all along. They knew that they could do this and get away with it. So 4 or 5 years ago, when all of us, handful of few remaining liberals or people who still believe in the rule of law and the government of the United States should abide by treaties and agreements and laws and human rights, when we were screaming and frothing at the mouth and the right wing on radio and television and in the government were just laughing at us and saying, oh, yeah, OK, sure. Sit down. Shut up, you whiny asses. They were saying that for a reason. The rule of law in this country doesn't exist anymore. They just happened to figure that out since they were the architects of the destruction of the rule of law. They figured out long before we did. Okay. So if the rule of law no longer applies, if the government just has to maintain state secrets, what happens when they want your ass? Huh, Truth Seeker and the rest of you, what happens when they want your family? What happens if they want your uncle or your auntie? What happens if they want your kid? What was it that Pastor Niemöller said? Huh? What did he say? They came for the trade unionists, and I didn't say anything. They came for the Jews, and I didn't say anything. Came for the liberals, and I didn't say anything. Came for the socialists, I didn't say anything. Because, you see, I wasn't any of those. And then they came for me, and I'll be damned. There was nobody left to speak out on my behalf. So, for you people who think that I am too rough on the Obama administration, look, I freely admit, every time he gets out there and gives a speech, oh, my knees get wobbly. They just do, and I just want to reach up and touch the hem of his garment. Amen and amen. Mr. President, I just love you. You are just so wonderful. But then when reality bites, and you realize that the Obama administration maintains for itself the same rights, a violation of citizens' rights. It retains for itself the same rights of torture. It retains for itself the same rights of surveillance that George W. Bush used so effectively, and all of his criminals. Then what are you left to believe? Do you really think Barack Obama wants to see that we have jobs in this country? Give me a goddamn break. Will somebody wake up out there about what's really going on? And again, I apologize for my language. I just can't take too much more of this. A little bit more about the Quran BQ. It's going to occur apparently in Gainesville on Saturday. This Reverend Terry Jones, some more information on him has crossed our desk, so to speak, and I'll share that with you in a second. But I wonder if he's related by marriage or whatever to Reverend Jim Jones. Reverend Terry Jones, probably not. But I got this interesting email here from George in Seattle regarding this whole issue. And George raises an interesting and very salient point. George writes, Mike, I wonder how many Qurans General Petraeus has burned along with their Muslim owners in Bush's and now Obama's illegal unjustifiable wars. Doesn't Petraeus think that killing hundreds of thousands of Muslims and occupying their countries for the sake of empire building and corporate greed might have an effect on the safety of our troops? Both Petraeus and the preacher in Florida believe in the same wacko Christian end times nonsense, and both want war with all of Islam, thinking that this will fulfill biblical prophecy and bring that Jesus dude back. The only real difference between these two, Petraeus and the Reverend Jones, these two whack jobs, George writes, is that thanks to President Barack Obama, Petraeus is now in the perfect position to make his Christian crusade happen. And now Hillary Clinton is complaining about this preacher having a Koranbecue. This woman has tens of thousands of Blackwater mercenaries working for her at the State Department and hasn't seen a war against Muslims she doesn't like. The real problem Hillary, Obama, and Petraeus are having with this Terry Jones nut is that his Koran-burning party could make it more difficult for the neocons and the neocrats to get enough citizens into Iraq and Afghanistan, or enough citizens in Iraq and Afghanistan to act as quislings against their own country's interests, so our occupation and raping of their countries can move along as planned. George in Seattle. Yeah, well, of course. Absolutely. So this freakoid in Gainesville is going to burn so-called holy books. But the American government of the last two presidents, three actually, apparently doesn't have a problem burning people who happen to be Muslim. And why are we burning alive babies and men and women, assuming some of them have their Qurans, their holy books handy, that go up in flames with their roasting bodies? Why is that okay? And the freak in Gainesville is causing an international uproar. I don't quite get it. And it's a good thing George wrote and pointed it out, because this blew right past me. How about you, True Seeger? Yeah, we can all be righteously indignant about the bonfire planned for Saturday by this crazy bastard in Florida. But is this crazy bastard in Florida any different from the crazy bastards that have been running the United States government while we have been burning Muslims to a crisp? Huh? Yes, there is a big difference. The crazy bastard in Florida only has the power of media, which apparently is damn powerful. But the crazy bastards who set U.S. foreign policy have the power of the United States and the British and a few other scattered lesser entities, militaries, to burn Muslims. So on the day coming, the Reverend Terry Jones will burn books while the United States continues to burn actual Muslims. So somebody tell me, which is the more obscene? Never mind. You know, a lot of talk about, a whole bunch of issues came together. A lot of talk about the declining U.S. industrial base, the loss of our industrial power. The Chinese are gaining on us in leaps and bounds. Listen, be very quiet. Listen, shh, 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 listen. Hear that? Those hundreds of millions of footsteps are the Chinese people gaining on the United States marketing and manufacturing machine. We are soon going to be number two. And then, of course, we're going to fall to number three. And at some point along the line, we are going to wind up like the UK, way down the list of countries that matter worth a damn, except we'll still have lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of nuclear bombs. But Keith Bradshaw, writing the New York Times this morning, and then writing online, the two articles that kind of intersect and dovetail perfectly about the emerging Chinese industrial giant that is soon going to engulf the planet. Might be a good time to start learning. I don't know. What is the most, I'm sure Prairie 2 will send me an email. No, Michael will in Roswell. What is the most dominant dialect of Chinese that is used? They will let me know. But it might be a good time to learn that. Because the Chinese are coming, the Chinese are coming, the Chinese are coming. And the American capitalists are assisting in that takeover. Are they assisting? Because the American capitalists don't give a damn who's in power. The American capitalists can do business with anyone. They're like Margaret Thatcher said about Gorbachev. You know, I can do business with this man. But the American capitalists can do business with cannibals. The American capitalists can do business with people who murder their own children, their own spouses. The American capitalists can do business with people who, well, burn Muslims alive. Doesn't matter to American capitalists. Money, after all, is money. Collateral damage is incidental to the whole enterprise. So, to hell with that. Anyway, I digress. So, Keith Bradshaw brings together several excellent points about why we live in a dying country. I happened to turn on Morning Joe this morning. Joe Scarborough and his crew of interesting... especially Mika Brzezinski, his wife on camera. I don't know what she is off camera. I don't think they're, I don't know if they have anything going or not. But Joe always gets just very babyfied around her. Have you noticed that? Anytime Mika and Joe are on camera together, Joe becomes infantilized, and Mika becomes very momish in the wrong way, in the Philip Wiley kind of way, you know, the momism kind of way. And then their crew, try to coexist with this garbage slopping around inside your television screen on MSNBC in the morning. That's one thing that gets me about conservatives. They are so willing to act like babies, especially when they're around women. I digress again. Anyway, I'm watching this morning, and the woman from CNBC who comes on every once in a while, what's her name, who gives a business report during Joe Scarborough's program, Morning Joe. She came on and had lots of upbeat news. Well, the number of people applying for unemployment fell by 10%. So instead of 500,000 applying, only 400,000. And then somehow they got off on a riff about how great America still was. And then they played that Lee Greenwood song, I'm Proud to Be an American. And I thought I was going to lose my lunch or breakfast. It was just horrifying. But trust me, a young woman who works for CNBC and Uncle Joe and Mika, the United States is not number one any longer in anything except maybe crazy people in our political system. But I way digress. Come on back after the break and let me tell you what that was all about.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy. By the score. Now she gets her kicks in Stepney, not in Knightsbridge anymore. So don't play with me, cause you're playing with fire.
21 past the hour. By the way, I have a message here from the American Federation of State, County and Municipal Employees. The message is, we know all too well what happens when Republicans run the show. Apologies and favors for big oil and Wall Street, schemes to privatize or destroy Social Security, and hundreds of thousands more layoffs for our teachers, nurses, and firefighters. So as we get close to November, remember, history repeats itself only if you let it. Huh? Okay, Keith Bradshaw, writing in the Times about a village in China, Changsha, in south central China. And this village is emerging as a center of clean energy manufacturing, a global center of clean energy manufacturing. Now, in this country, as we watch everything slowly deteriorate and turn to dust, and Obama keeps coming out with his incentives, well, here's more tax breaks for small businesses, and here's depletion allowances where it concerns your tax write-offs for your new equipment. And the fact remains that, you know, you can do that until hell is a skating rink, and it won't do anything, because if people don't have any money, it doesn't make any difference how many tax cuts you give business if people have no money to buy anything. But that's kind of a tangential issue, and we'll get to that in a moment. The reason I bring that up is because we don't have, or we do still have, but it's a declining industrial base, while China, well, China is churning out solar panels for the American and European markets. They are developing new equipment to manufacture the panels. You know, the old tool and die makers, remember that? They're also branching into turbines that generate electricity from wind in China. By contrast, clean energy companies, Keith writes, in the United States and Europe are struggling. They've started cutting jobs and moving operations to China in joint ventures over there with local partners. The booming Chinese clean energy sector, now more than a million jobs strong. Think about that. It's quickly coming to dominate the production of technologies essential to slow global warming and other forms of air pollution. But since we're in America and we don't believe in global warming, it's just a liberal plot, we don't pay attention to such things. But anyways, Keith writes, much of China's clean energy success lies in aggressive government policies. Ooh, socialism. That help this crucial export industry in ways that most other governments, i.e. the United States, do not. Now, the measures employed by China are in violation of trade agreements. And that's kind of the point of the article here. The measures used by the Chinese break international rules to which China and almost all other nations subscribe, according to some of the trade experts interviewed by the New York Times. An example of the government's methods, Hunan Sun Zone, Optoelectronics. You get that? Sunzone Optoelectronics in Hunan, a two-year-old company, makes solar panels and ships close to 95% of them to Europe. And now it is opening sales offices in New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles in preparation for a push into the American market in February. To help Sunzone, to help it grow and dominate, the municipal government of Hunan transferred to the company 22 acres of valuable urban land close to downtown at a bargain basement price, which, of course, reduced the company's startup costs and greatly increased its worth and attractiveness to investors. See how this works? Meanwhile, a state bank in China is preparing to lend this company, Sunzone Optoelectronics, lend the company all the money it needs at a low interest rate. And the provincial government is sweetening the deal by reimbursing the company for most of the interest payments, which has the net effect of helping Sunzone double its production capacity. And they've only been around for 2 years. But we don't do that here. And there's a number of reasons we don't. In the first place, if Obama attempted that, he would be a dirty, filthy, rotten, Kenyan-born, no birth certificate, socialist! And all the teabaggers would jump up and down and stomp their little clubbed feet into saying things like, oh, he's a socialist! No, he's a Nazi! No, he's using my tax monies for cap and trade! What's cap and trade? It's that thing! So we don't do that here. But there's more to this story, and we'll have it for you in just a second. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, Keith Bradshaw, this morning's New York Times, explaining about how the Chinese not only are they galumphing into number one position in terms of the size of their economy and the way they will soon, very soon, be dominating just about everything. You know, once you are the dominant economic power, you also become the dominant military power and the dominant political power. That's just the way things work. Anyway, the solar panel industry, the clean energy manufacturing sector that the Chinese have decided for a number of reasons to dominate, and dominate it they are. They provide the Chinese government, both local, provincial, and the state, provide land. The banks get together and provide low-interest loans. The provincial government then helps by paying some of the interest on the loan, and on and on and on. Now, these kinds of rules, or this kind of help that industry is getting in China, violates the World Trade Organization rules. The WTO, remember the WTO? Just like NAFTA, WTO? This kind of help violates WTO rules banning virtually all subsidies to exporters that could be successfully, and since they're violating all this, it could be challenged at the agency, the WTO's tribunals in Geneva. The same as going to a local court and saying, well, I don't want the phone tower in my neighborhood. The World Trade Organization has a tribunal, a court in Geneva, and perhaps somebody will go there and say, wait, the Chinese are, well, you know. As Keith writes, if the country with the subsidies fails to remove them, you know, if you go to the WTO tribunal and start whining and bitching and complaining, if the country with those subsidies fails to remove them, other countries can retaliate, ta-da, by imposing steep tariffs on imports. Now, wait a second. Isn't that what I said Thursday? Imports? Never mind. By imposing steep tariffs on imports from that country. But you see, multinational companies, the capitalists, and the trade associations in the clean energy business, as in many other industries, the global capitalists, they are wary, hesitant. They won't file trade cases against China. Why? Because they fear Chinese officials' reputation for retaliating against those capitalist joint ventures inside China and potentially denying market access to any company that takes sides against China. See how that works? When you become the dominant economy, you also can dictate political reality, military reality, social reality, religious reality. You can do anything you want. Now, are you, what? Religious reality? What are you talking about, Mike? I'm not going to become a Buddhist. No. Don't you remember back when the Europeans were the dominant global force, power, economy? They were able to dictate religious direction very simply. They would go to places like South America, North America, Hawaii, Asia, the Philippines, wherever, and force their religion onto people. So you don't want to be a Chinese Buddhist? You may not have a choice. Anyway, World Trade Organization rules allow countries to subsidize goods and services in their home markets. You know, we can, Barack Obama can offer a bailout to GM. Okay, no problem. As long as those subsidies do not discriminate against imports. But the rules, you see, prohibit export subsidies. Why? Well, that will, in theory, prevent governments from trying to help their companies gain in world markets. But you see, this is also another zero-sum game. In order for that country to gain, this country has to lose. There's no other way around it. Well, there is. Sort of. The shortcut between those two realities is capitalism. Capitalism never loses. Ever. Under any circumstances. No matter what. And I defy anybody out there, I don't care how bright you are or how right-wing you are, to show me an example where capitalism ultimately was defeated. Oh, there may have been little temporary bumps. What about the communist revolution in Russia, Mike? A different form of capitalism, state capitalism.
What about China, Mike?
State capitalism. You see, capitalism never fails because of its nature. Because of what it is. Now, the World Trade Organization also requires countries to declare all national, state, and local subsidies every 2 years. In other words, what are you doing to help your industries compete or dominate the global market? That way, if one country's exports surge suspiciously, other countries' trade officials can easily check to see if that product is being subsidized. Because the only thing that would make things surge suspiciously would be if all of a sudden production costs fell. How do production costs fall? Well, they don't fall in China because of cheap labor. China is cheap labor. So what's the only other, right, government subsidies? Now, China ignores all of these requirements since it joined the World Trade Organization. And why? It says the Chinese position, the government position, is it is still a developing country struggling to understand its global commitments. China stands there, one can draw the picture, with its finger in its nose going, well, I don't know anything about this. What am I supposed to do? World trade what? I don't know. We're just trying to make stuff. And so far that's worked. Now, Chinese wind and solar power manufacturers further benefit from the Chinese government's imposition of sharp reductions in the export of their raw materials that are known as rare earths. That's what they're called. Those are minerals that are crucial for solar panels and wind turbines. So China ordered, because they can do this, the Chinese government can do this, they ordered, okay, that's enough. No more exporting of that stuff. China mines almost all of the world's rare earths. And once again, World Trade Organization rules ban these kind of export restrictions. But these are the Chinese. They don't give a damn. What are you talking about? It's our dirt. We're not going to export our dirt. You need our dirt for what? To make solar panels? Hell, we make solar panels. Oh, no. Very simple. Of course, China's success in clean energy also comes from the fact that from assets that are enjoyed by many of China's industries. For example, they have expanding universities with very low tuition that groom lots of engineering talent. We don't do that anymore. We put together MBAs, people to go to work to manipulate currencies. Ooh, that provides a lot of jobs, doesn't it, huh? So the Chinese expand universities that groom lots of engineering talent. They also have ever-improving transportation and telecommunications networks. Oh, you mean infrastructure. Right. Roads, bridges, dams, airports, runways, ways of moving goods and services, wireless communication. Huh? Huh? We don't do that here. We don't do any of this here, because if we did, you see, the capitalists would go insane, and they would unleash their rabid dogs like Glenn Beck, among others, and the rest of these right-wing bastards who would then organize tea parties, tea baggers, to start chanting and screaming, socialism, socialism. Uh-huh. Well, then let's just all die. As Keith writes in the Times, the rapid rise of China's solar and wind industries illuminates how the government helps many export industries. Mm-hmm. As well as the challenges for the West, that's us, now that China has emerged as the world's second largest economy, surpassing Japan and gaining on the United States. Learn Chinese, Truth Seeker. And also, get a couple of books on, Buddhism for Dummies. You might want to read that. 5 years ago, China wasn't even a player in the solar industry. 5 years ago. What were we doing 5 years ago? Oh, that's right. We were invading and killing people. China is now on track to produce more than half the world's solar panels this year. And more than 95% of them will be exported to countries like the United States and Germany, because those two countries, U.S. and Germany, offer generous subsidies for consumers who buy solar panels. Well, that's a wonderful idea. Why don't we make them here? Oh, by the way, China's also on track to make nearly half the world's wind turbines this year. Wind power. Solar power. It's all happening at the zoo. We'll be right back. Before the hour. Where'd the music go? the point of what Keith Bradshaw has written in this morning's Times is simply how it works in a society that determines that A, they want their people to go to work, B, they want to become the dominant economic force on Earth. China's expenditures on the military is about, what, 1/150th? Of what it is in the United States, 1/100th, it's ridiculously small. And yet China, at some point will become the dominant military force too. That just as surely as A follows, or B follows A, which, C follows B and A, and yada, yada, yada. China offers financial incentives for utilities to use wind power, which is less costly than solar power. And the country passed the United States last year as the world's largest wind turbine market. So not only are they using what they produce, but they're exporting it to the rest of the world. And as Keith writes, government-subsidized turbine makers in China are now preparing for large-scale exports to the U.S. and Europe, which will also result in violations of the World Trade Organization rules. But you see, the World Trade Organization rules were designed to hamstring so-called third world nations so that the United States and the UK and other industrialized countries could go in and rape, steal, and pillage their natural resources and their farm products and their labor force and so on and so forth. Nobody figured that China was going to rise up like a dragon. But that's exactly what has happened. So China violates all the World Trade Organization rules that it wants to. Who's going to tell it to stop? Do you walk up to a dragon and say, "Dragon, release that prince"? No, you don't. Meanwhile, China itself imports virtually no wind turbines or solar panels. They don't have to. They don't have to, which has the net effect of protecting those industries in their own country. For example, until late last year required, now this is a part I love, until late last year, China required that 70% of the content of each wind turbine and 80% of the content of each solar panel be made in China. Ah! Can you believe it? All right, we're not going to import anything, but if we do, 70% of it has to be made here. Well, then it's not really an import, is it? Or 80% if it is a solar panel, but then it's not an import, is it? Shut up! And China quietly dropped that rule after objections from American capitalists. Wait a minute. Now get this. This is the part that is like salt in the wound. China strongly opposes suggestions in the United States Congress that the U.S. or Europe follow China's example and impose, quote, local content, end quote, rules to help their own struggling renewable energy industries. China says, oh no, you can't make sure that 70% of your wind turbines, 80% of your solar panels are made in your own countries. Oh no, can't do it. Li Junfeng, a senior Chinese energy policymaker, said, quote, now if the U.S. sets up that kind of regulation, it will really be a problem because we need to buy from each other. End quote. All right, what do we buy from China? Everything. What do they buy from us? All of our natural resources. Where does that leave us? With a couple of chopsticks sticking out of our eyes, I guess. Oh, China's expansion has been traumatic for American and European solar power manufacturers. This year, BP, you remember them, BP shut down its solar panel manufacturing in Frederick, Maryland, and in Spain, and laid off most of the employees while it expanded its joint venture with and in China. Why, of course. In Marlborough, Massachusetts, Evergreen Solar plans to move the final manufacturing steps for its solar panels from Massachusetts to China, which will eliminate 300 more jobs. Because you know why? Because this little company, Evergreen Solar, struggled to borrow money in the United States. Couldn't. Nobody would lend it to them. And then they found out the costs in China were way, way lower. Now, what are we doing? The Obama administration has begun high-level discussions on how to respond to all this, according to Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner. Back at Sunzone in China, they are doubling its manufacturing capacity by the end of the year. State banks and municipal government are ready to help. The company has reached a tentative deal to borrow $11 million to increase employment to 600 workers. That's in China. The bank will lend the money at an interest rate of about 6%, and the provincial government will then give Sunzone a direct rebate to pay more than half the interest on the loan. And according to the manager of Sunzone in China, quote, just yesterday, the bank general manager brought his staff here to see how they could be of service to us. We don't need to go to the bank. They come here. But back at Evergreen Solar in Massachusetts, struggled for 3 years to raise money in the U.S., said, no, we're out of here. The owner of Evergreen Solar said, quote, you can't get a penny in the United States. It doesn't matter who you call. Banks, government, it's awful. So we're going to China. Well, what happens when Republicans run the show? Apologies and favors for big oil and Wall Street. Schemes to privatize Social Security and hundreds of thousands more layoffs for our teachers, nurses, and firefighters. So as we get close to November, remember, history only repeats itself if you let it. Ooh. So, who is protesting what China is doing with the clean energy industry? Who's protesting? Unions are. The United States, you remember unions, don't you? We just had Labor Day. Ah, that's the day where everybody says, oh, unions, yeah. And then they forget about it. The unions, in particular the United Steelworkers Union, plans to file a legal case with the Obama administration today. Or planned to do it today. I guess they already did it. Accusing China of violating World Trade Organization rules by subsidizing exports of clean energy equipment. That's according to the union's president and his advisors. Keith Bradshaw, New York Times, also wrote about this online. So the only ones complaining are the unions. A filing more than 5,000 pages long and 18 inches thick, ooh, that's important, contends that the central government in Beijing and China's provincial governments have used land grants, low-interest loans, and dozens of other measures that violate World Trade Organization rules. The union says the violations have helped Chinese companies expand their share of the world market for wind turbines, solar panels, nuclear power plants, and other clean energy equipment. Yeah, I know. At the expense of jobs in the United States and around the world. The filing by the United Steelworkers asked the Obama administration to begin formal proceedings at the World Trade Organization in Geneva to force China to repeal the subsidies. The filing says, quote, unless China's policies are urgently addressed, the U.S. may never get a fair shot at making the green technologies of the future, end quote. So the union is filing the brief. The United Steelworkers, I know you don't know this because nobody knows anything about unions anymore. Well, all right, if you're a union worker, you know about it. But they represent a lot of energy-related jobs, including the companies that make the steel for wind turbine towers and nuclear reactors. And the glass workers, that was the big deal when I was a kid growing up. I grew up in Toledo, man, Glass City. Glass workers who make solar panels. Various kinds of incandescent and halogen light bulbs. The union also represents workers involved in the assembly of wind turbine towers. and those who make gears, valves, engines, and other components of clean energy equipment. All those job categories have had increased competition from China in recent years, and China doesn't play by the rules, and you know why? They don't have to. A, B, there's no one who can force them to. So, another big American union, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, IBEW, is also involved in the installation of many clean energy systems. They have not filed a lawsuit. But there you go. So what's the best way? Another good way to kill the unions? Kill the jobs that are still unionized. How hard is that? That's the Reagan. That's the Ronald Reagan play. Remember when he came in? Fire! Fire the air traffic controllers! Fire them! The union ones. So if you want to make sure that the unions die, you don't do what Henry Ford did and the rest of the turn-of-the-century capitalists and hire goons to go out and beat up workers and union organizers. You don't have to do that. All you do is export the jobs that are held primarily by union workers. Just, they make solar panels here. Let's form a joint venture with China. Get rid of these union bastards. So then what happens to the union workers? They apply for unemployment. So there you kind of have it. I just found this very intriguing. Keith Bradshaw's almost PowerPoint presentation in the New York Times this morning. In the print edition. I took Rusty out so he could relieve himself after a long night in the house. I walk up to the top of the hill to get the paper. In the darkness, I might add. This is, we get up at 6 a.m. to get Molly off to school. Open the New York Times, come back in the house, pour a cup of coffee, and there it is. On clean energy, China skirts the rules. Gee, there's a surprise. Robert Reich, who was Secretary of Labor during the Clinton administration, remember Robert Reich? He pops up every now and then. He is a liberal, almost a socialist, not really, but, you know, he's a progressive liberal. And probably the Paul Krugman School of Economics and so on and so forth. He's come out with a quick POV on why Obama's proposed corporate tax cuts that he made such a big deal about the other day are such a bad idea. The bottom line on what Reich says, and I'll share it with you in a second, is that most of us would be pretty upset if we knew that these tax breaks were furthering unemployment. Yeah. So what's the real agenda then? Well, as Susie Madrick put this up, Crooks and Liars. And the real agenda, of course, Susie doesn't say this, but the real agenda is to utterly and absolutely and completely annihilate the middle class, the unions, reduce everybody to the level where working for $3 an hour or $3.50 because there will no longer be a minimum wage will have to become acceptable. Capitalism demands it. That's why they call it capitalism. It's about capital. Reich writes, Republicans and corporate lobbyists have been demanding tax cuts on corporate investments for one reason. Big corporations are investing in automated equipment, robotics, numerically controlled machine tools, and software. These investments are designed to boost profits by permanently replacing workers and cutting payrolls. The tax breaks Obama is proposing would make such investments all the more profitable. Huh? Permanently replacing workers. Get used to it. In sum, Reich writes, Obama's proposed corporate tax cuts, one, won't generate more jobs because they don't put any cash in workers' pockets, as would, for example, exempting the first $20,000 of income from the payroll tax and making up the difference by applying the payroll tax to incomes over $250,000. Two, Obama's proposed corporate tax cuts will subsidize companies to cut even more jobs. And three, will cost $130 billion. Money that could be better be spent helping states and locales avoid laying off thousands of teachers, firefighters, and police. But I thought Obama just said the other day that he doesn't want to lay off teachers, firefighters, and police. What? Robert Reich? What are you, a commie? Are you a liar? Are you a Nazi? Are you a Republican? What are you talking about? So why is Obama proposing the tax cuts? Huh? That's a good question, isn't it? I'll tell you when we come back. Responded to Obama's decision a few days back to cut all these corporate taxes. And Reich is trying to explain, the former labor secretary, trying to explain why this is such a bad idea. In fact, Reich says that Barack Obama is really playing chicken with the Republicans over these corporate tax breaks. So Reich goes on, why is Obama proposing these tax cuts? They don't generate more jobs because they don't put any cash in workers' pockets. They'll subsidize companies to cut even more jobs. I mean, if you get a tax break, more money in your pocket, why should you hire anybody? And three, it'll cost $130 billion. Huh? So why is Obama proposing them, Robert Reich asked? To put Republicans in a bind. That's it. See, if the Republicans refuse to go along, Obama can justifiably say that they have no agenda other than obstruction. After all, the only thing they've been arguing for is lower taxes, right? On the other hand, if the Republicans agree to support these corporate tax cuts, then Obama can claim a legislative victory that will help Democrats neutralize their opponents in the upcoming elections, Reich writes. Except for one thing, sir. Labor Secretary, sir. Do you honestly believe that the people who are going to vote teabag Republican right-wing neo-Nazi understand even your last sentence there, much less comprehend it? Do you think that the issue won't be demagogued to the point by these teabag candidates that even if Obama does get these tax cuts through, the bag candidates will convince their flatlined voters that he imposed tax increases? They are that stupid, Robert, sir, Mr. Reich. But he goes on, the proposals also make it harder for Republicans to argue that the Bush income tax cut should be extended for the richest 3% of taxpayers because small businesses need it. No, they don't. In the first place, I don't know a small business. I know one who might be in that top 3%. Obama's corporate tax cuts would appear to do the trick. Huh? That will satisfy the fact that small businesses need a tax cut. Okay, here you are. The Bush administration, the Obama administration probably figures that even if Republicans agree to the proposed tax cuts, nothing will come of it anyway. Congress will be in session for only about 2 weeks between now and the midterm election, so it's doubtful these proposals would be enacted in any event. Eh. But this cynical exercise on the part of Mr. Obama could backfire if Republicans call Obama's bluff and demand the corporate tax cuts be put on a fast track and get signed into legislation before the midterms. Because then the Republicans, you see, will claim credit. More troubling, Reich writes, Obama's whopping proposed corporate tax cuts help legitimize the, what we all thought was dead, supply-side dogma that the economy's biggest obstacle to growth is the cost of capital rather than the plight of ordinary working people. So, once again, even though President Obama gave such a wonderful speech yesterday, and so many people were so intrigued and come away with a little glimmer of hope and think, well, yeah, I'm not real sure what he said, but it sure sounds good. And then you have useful fools like me. Well, I'm not so useful anymore, but people like me who say, well, see, he's trying. Look, when you get right down to it, and getting right down to it is where we're all going to have to get eventually, really, there's one game in town. And it's not Barack Obama's game, and it's not your game. And in fact, it's not the crazy people in the society's game, like the Becks and the Baggers and so on and so forth. The only game going is predatory capitalism. And predatory capitalism, until it is overthrown, until it is removed, until capitalism is utterly and absolutely destroyed. Globally, one would hope, but in this country, certainly. Until that day, you and I are going to lurch along, limping, thinking that we have something going for ourselves, when in fact, like all the great value we thought we had in our homes, anytime capitalism decides to take it from us, they will, because they can. The capacity for one more. What we've been talking about here is the power of economic power and the failure of the capitalist class to do anything about it, because the capitalist class loves this. It wants this. It wants jobs to go where labor costs are zero or as close to it as they possibly can. That's damn sure not in the United States. And the capitalist class also has determined who our leaders are. In the executive branch as well as the legislative branch. In the meantime, we have 360 million people here who eventually are going to catch fire. And when we do, it's not going to be pleasant, I don't think. It may take another 6 months to a year. It may take some tightening down of the political right-wingers and the religious crazy people in all three religions of the book. There has to be more madness, and it is globalizing this madness. As we talked about during the first hour, it is globalizing. Leaders in Pakistan are saying to the U.S., your crazy rat bastard in Florida is putting the earth on the verge of global religious war. Oh, well. So, the capitalists don't care about any of this stuff. As a matter of fact, they encourage the Chinese to do what they're doing because the capitalists always win. The capitalists continue to close down businesses in the United States and lay more and more and more people off because it's a cost. It's an expense. Give us robots. Robert Scheer. He's the last one. I just got to get this into the mix. He writes, this week's proposals by the Obama administration to deal with the persistent economic crisis will be, he wrote this before the speech yesterday, as with previous plans that involved trillions of taxpayer dollars, little more than salt in the wound. Once again, the strategy is to stimulate the economy by funding projects and tax cuts while ignoring the root cause of the problem, which is a housing foreclosure meltdown that has chilled the spending of a majority of American consumers. With 11 million homeowners underwater, and on their mortgages, and 3 million more already foreclosed on. We have to assume, given the average household size, that some 40 million Americans are feeling mighty strapped. The numbers grow to an overwhelming majority when you take into account the distress of all homeowners who have watched the value of the family nest egg, their home, dwindle, even if they substantially paid down or paid off their mortgage debt. And this very widespread feeling of being suddenly much poorer is a nationwide scourge that has dramatically cut the appetite for consumption that drives this economy. The chief economist for the National Federation of Independent Business told the Wall Street Journal, quote, if you give a small business guy $20,000, he'll say, well, I could buy a delivery truck, but I have nobody to deliver to. And although the members of the National Federation of Independent Business would be happy with the tax cut, the head of that organization said the most important help would be to, quote, finally address the most important person in the economy, the consumer, end quote. And as Robert Scheer points out, the anger of wannabe consumers who no longer feel they have the wherewithal to feed that most important of American passions is what is fueling the widespread rage against elected officials. You see, folks, what they've done, they've taken away our mojo. We can't go buy stuff anymore. We can't go into debt anymore. We can't get any more money out of our houses. Scheer writes, the Democrats, being the party in power, are the most popular target, but they are in deep denial when they blame their pending electoral plight on the demagoguery of the Republican opponents. Of course, the Republicans and their deep pocket sponsors are being outrageous hypocrites when they blame others for the horrid consequences of their decades of lobbying for radical financial deregulation. And ever since the so-called Reagan Revolution, the Republicans' mantra has been, get government off the back of big business. And once that was accomplished and Wall Street crumbled under the weight of its own greed, they supported George W. Bush in bailing the bastards out. Yeah. But the fault Robert Scheer writes, is clearly bipartisan. It was Bill Clinton who signed off on the radical deregulation legislation. And it is Obama who continues Bush's practice of bailing out the bankers while ignoring the anguish their toxic mortgage packages cause the rest of us. That is why the Fed, the Federal Reserve, has gifted the banks with interest-free money to finance their new acquisitions while making them whole again by purchasing more than $2 trillion in toxic mortgage-backed securities and other dubious assets. Not surprisingly, the bankers pocketed that enormous gift from the taxpayers, but did nothing in return by way of lending an investment that would bring down unemployment. Why should they? Capitalism, by its very nature, wants to, lusts after, must destroy the middle class, must destroy the working class, must reduce everybody to serf status. Mike says. Now back to Robert Scheer, which brings us to the current disastrous moment. The president, who inherited a deep recession that began 13 months before he took office, is now viewed as a big socialist spender because he followed in Bush's footsteps. Blackmailed by the notion that the entire system would go kaput if the bankers were not accommodated. Remember that? Everything's about to collapse! Remember that? Right after Obama took all the, we need money! The amount of money now available for Obama to spend without freaking everyone out about an increase in the debt is very paltry. The commitment of $50 billion to a national infrastructure program, $50 billion, to be phased in over the next 10 years is too little too late. It's chump change compared with, oh, say, the $350 billion in loans and guarantees to one bank alone, Citigroup, which still cannot stand on its own 2 feet. You see how this works? Capitalism, truth seeker, doesn't care if you live or die. In fact, would prefer at some point that you goddamn die. Get out of the way. Let us run our factories with robots and computerized number thingies. Go away! There's only one course left for Obama, Robert Scheer writes, and it is to do now what he should have done in his first term. Abandon the hope that banks will voluntarily aid desperate homeowners. Oh, yeah, sure, that'll happen. And instead push for new government regulations and changes in the bankruptcy law to force the banks to make deals to keep people in their homes. There is precious little else to talk about. For if the housing market, the bedrock of not only the American dream, but more important, the financial security of a nation of consumers, if the housing market is not restored, we are in for one long, dreary period of economic stagnation at best, or a severe downturn and a society in dangerous turmoil. Robert Scheer. You can find this at thenation.com. It originally appeared in truthdig.org. Well, there are some of us on the invisible left. The left. There are some of us who have been screaming and advocating that the consumer get the attention necessary. That's us. We're the consumer. That the average working person, me and you and him and her, that we got the attention when it became apparent that the capitalists had just absolutely burned to the ground our whole system. But what who heard that? Nobody heard that, except more people on the left. The people who are in power, the capitalists who control everything, they said, well, yeah, we burned everything down. We took all the money. We raped and pillaged. But look, we need to have our company shored up. We need to be able to do this all over again. And we don't have the money right now, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, to do it all over again. So let's pretend. Let's play pretend. Come on. Come on. Let's do it. And in the meantime, as we continue to get everything we want from this administration, as we did from the previous two, we will continue to hire the leeches and vampires to go out there in the world and scream, Obama's a socialist! And we'll even spice it up a bit and challenge where he was born! I'm afraid of the world. David, Mike, what is sad is that the three progressive senators who were part of the group of 23 that voted no on the Iraq war invasion are in risk of being defeated by extreme right-wing corporatist Republicans with Dino Rossi. He's the Republican candidate in Washington against Patty Murray being the worst. The three senators, David writes, are Patty Murray, Barbara Boxer, and Russ Feingold. Patty Murray was for a public option. Russ Feingold tried to get the money out of elections until the Supreme Court ruined it, and Barbara Boxer challenges Bush's electoral votes in 2004 when they called for a senator to sign on. Yeah, remember, she was the one who, the only one that had the courage to challenge the electoral vote. So Patty Murray, Barbara Boxer, and Russ Feingold under attack by the extreme right wing. And of course they would be. This is the thing, truth seekers. The ultimate goal of capitalism is not just to destroy the middle class and the working class. And in that process, destroying the possibility even of a loudmouth progressive leader coming up out of the ranks. Can't have that. But the goal of the capitalists is to utterly and absolutely destroy the thought that somebody 19, 20, 25 years old might be having right now that he or she might want to become a legislative leader or maybe even an executive branch leader in order to fight back against the corporate predation that is in the process of destroying the United States. By taking truly decent people like Patty Murray and Russ Feingold and eviscerating them, stripping the skin off of them politically, letting their guts fall to the floor politically. You know, kind of the scorched earth policy. Look what we will do to you. This is what the American soldiers did during the invasion and murder of Native Americans in this country. Back in the day, you've heard of scalping. You know what those dirty Indians did, scalping. Of course, you must realize that scalping was started by the white people. Ah? Ugh, heap, have many scalp. No, no, it was a white person's form of terrorism. Just like salting the blankets given to the Native American women and children with toxic disease germs. The first biological warfare? The U.S. military. In order to, you know, cleanse ethnically the lands needed to build, oh, I don't know, Denver? Oklahoma City? So, where was I? The objective of capitalism is to destroy not just the it's always been their objective, to destroy not just the working class that may produce leadership, the middle class that always does produce working leadership, but to destroy this time. You know, capitalism has been fighting this stuff for how long? Huh? I guess since the Industrial Revolution. So what is that, 1840s? We're coming up on 200 years. Capitalism has been busting its ass trying to ruin and destroy and devour and eat everything on Earth. And now it's a race. Do they win, or does the planet burn up before they have a chance to totally dominate everything? That's the race that's going on. And the capitalists are bound and determined. You know, the great engine of global consumption, so to speak, and it's not consumption, that's the word they use, has been the American public. How much of our economy is run by the people who go to Target and Walmart and these other slum-dwelling, filthy, goddamn places and buy stuff made out of cheap, toxic material? What percentage of our economy is run by that kind of purchase? 60%? 70? I forget the number. What is it? That's too much power in the hands of the American consumer. Way too much power. Oh, no, 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 no. Because as long as the American consumer has that kind of power, they can withhold that power. And if they withhold it, God forbid, we, the capitalists, might have to relinquish a little bit of something. I don't know, our power, our money? Our sanctity? Where are the Christians? Bring the Christians out here. Let's get the Christians. Yeah, let's get them. All right, Christians, go out there. Listen, the devil is stalking the land, and its name is socialism. I want you to go tell everybody that the devil is stalking the land! Socialism! Barack Obama was born in Kenya! We want everything. We capitalists want everything. Sharing is for kids on the kindergarten playground. We want and will get everything. And in the process of destroying your tinky-dink little country with your little tinky-dink Bill of Rights, oh, that's so cute. Your Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident. Oh, please. Please. There is only one truth that's self-evident. Money! And we want it all. Good night, they would say, and good luck. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care, and I'll see you tomorrow night.